The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 479. It's the 12th of May, 2016. On the podcast today, I have MX Oil guys, Stefan Olivier, CEO, and Nigel McKim. That's MXO, answering private investor questions. And fair play, the questions start easy, get harder and harder, and they, I think, answer them very honestly. By the way, at the end of each interview I do today, I do ask for three reasons why an investor should put your company on their watch list. And you can click the links here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog to click the link and follow that company for news straight to the front screen of your smartphone. Also on the podcast, I've got to say, a company I hold some stock in. That's Way Education. W-E-Y, online educator. David Massey, the chairman, talks about their improved results, interim results, I thought was very good. And the stock price didn't move at all. I thought, what's going on here? Huh? And it's like anything, you know. For a while, people said about online stuff, banking, it wouldn't work. Shopping for fruit and veg wouldn't work. I wouldn't pay for stuff over on the internet. People said it wouldn't work. And we break down these barriers, you know. We're stuck in our time, we hate change. And all of a sudden we realise, hang on, I prefer shopping online and banking online. And education will go the same way. And some people say, it doesn't really work. You watch. And they're the only education group operating in UK's only online fee-paying secondary school. So it's worth, I think, but don't just listen to my reasons, it's worth putting Way Education on your watch list. That's W-E-Y, all right? Also on the podcast, I've got the Mad Stork, private investor, successful private investor, talks about the following stocks: Sylvania Platinum, or Sylvania, Barclay Energy, Infrastrata, and Canadian Overseas Petroleum. He also says he's quite bearish at the moment, ahead of Brexit. And today's suggested stock with potential is Sykic. That's S-Y-Q, suggested by Paul. I'll read that out later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of MXR, that's Stefan Olivier, and Mr. Nigel McKim, their Chief Operating Officer. Guys, thanks again for joining me.
Yeah, how are you doing, Justin?
Hi, Justin.
I'm good, thanks. Now, listen, there's been a lot of... It's good that you come on and answer questions, because there's been a lot of private investor, you know, interest in this. And I've got to say at least one thing. There's no lack of liquidity in MX All shares, you know?
That's right. It's trading.
Okay, so let's go on. First of all, Stefan, could you give us an update for people not aware of MX All? Give us a quick update as to what you're all about there at MX All.
Yeah, so MX Oil was primarily set up to go after the reopening of the Mexican energy sector. Mid last year, we entered into an investment offshore Nigeria, and we've since fully financed that. The two wells that are being drilled, completed, and now being flow tested.
Okay, well now, listen, we've got some private investor questions. I've got to warn you, they start off quite easy. They get harder as they go on, so put your hard hats on and your flak jackets. Here we go. Number one, are you going to go with phase two of the AJ field development?
Nigel, over to you.
Yeah, so Justin, I'll take that one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a decision that ultimately will not be taken by us alone. It's a joint venture decision. But we would expect that the joint venture will approve phase two development. The beauty of this asset now is it's the boat has been paid for, the major facilities are in place, and what you're doing in phase two is drilling additional wells, so increasing the production through that facility. And commercially, it looks much more attractive if you look at it on a standalone basis. So, for a relatively small investment in the wells, you're significantly increasing the production rates across the asset. So, yes, we would expect it to be going ahead.
Okay, second question is, what are the associated costs here?
So it's early days. The joint venture hasn't landed on the costs as yet, but we currently expect in the order of $5 million spend on those phase two wells. And that compares with something in the order of $20 million that we've put in so far for the phase one development and to take us to this point in the project.
Okay. All right. Next question is, how do you intend to finance the costs?
So, given we'll be in revenues and we'll have an offtake in place, there'll be possibilities to finance phase two that weren't available to us for phase one. So typically RBL reserve-based lending or the off-taker in question providing us with the necessary capital. It all comes down to the cost of that capital, but it doesn't necessarily have to be financed via equity.
Okay. As regards Mexico, what other sites are you looking at there?
Yeah, so we're building on the focus that we've had to date. Our targets are the onshore conventional oil licenses in Mexico. Many will be aware listening into this call, the whole of the industry has been opened up there. So the offshore, the nearshore, the onshore, conventional and unconventional. But we're very focused in our target on the conventional onshore oil licenses. And we know best the Tampico-Misantla Basin, which has been our target to date. I think we would extend our sites further south into Veracruz and Tabasco also, but there has been a great deal more competition for those licenses. So I think we'll stay focused on Tampico-Misantla, but you know, have our eyes open and look for opportunities elsewhere should they emerge.
Okay, going back to Nigeria here, our next question is, when do you expect flow rates from RJ, please?
Yeah, so, our investment represents about 5% of the total ownership of the asset. So we don't have control over announcements, unfortunately. And we're aware that that is frustrating to our shareholders. But we can only release news to the markets once authorized to do so by the partnership. So that will be forthcoming in due course. We don't think it's far off. What we can say is that the work is proceeding, the flow tests are proceeding, and we're encouraged so far with the progress.
Okay. Obviously, the RNS released yesterday that the share price took a bit of a knock there, and so someone's putting the question, what news is there to look forward to?
Well, as Nigel was just explaining, flow rates, it's taken over 5 years for this project to get to where it is. Both the wells are being tested together independently, the FPSO itself. So flow rates are a huge milestone and in our view should help unlock some of the intrinsic value that's not being realized at the moment. The offtake agreement itself, the cash flow, phase two, and any other opportunities that we can sensibly finance.
Okay. Next one is, will the wells flow at 11,000 BOPD initially, or will it take time to build up to this level?
Yeah, so the 11,000 barrels of oil per day is the target for the phase one development, and we hope and expect that rates will get up to those levels. As in every new asset, you start gently. You've got to beam the wells up slowly so as not to damage the sand face completions, but also to allow the boat, the vessel, and the facilities to settle down to get the operations crews comfortable with the operating systems. That's in progress currently. As Stefan has just mentioned, they are doing individual tests on each of the wells, and that's so that the operators can understand the performance of each well and then set it at a level that will be stable and will ensure that the plant is stable in ongoing operations. So that process is well underway. As I think I said earlier, we're encouraged by the progress to date, and we have every expectation that the phase one target rates will be met.
Okay. Next question said, and I'm assuming it's referring to the RNS yesterday, which we should go into really. Will this affect any potential JVs with Pemex?
No. We continue to look at all investment options in Mexico. But we want to ensure that we do it in the most efficient way that we possibly can. Ensuring that we can extract as much value as possible.
Okay, and so The RNS there, I'll probably give a quick summary as to what happened there, but the question here is, for people who don't know what happened yesterday, but is it, where does this leave your relationship with Gio?
Well, this is what I was alluding to in terms of extracting as much possible value as possible. What we've learned in the last 2 years, we met Gio in May of 2014, and what we've learned in the last 2 years is a vast amount, and we can go for round 1.5 or round 2 or whatever it ends up being on our own. We've got expertise internally. Sergio Lopez, one of our directors, is local, and we'll go through the process of building our own in-country team that will be more efficient, most probably will cost less. This was not available to us 24 months ago. This is what we will do going forward. We know what's there. We're continuing to look at those assets. Nigel and Wilhelm Burgers are currently assessing 17 fields that we anticipate will be in round two. And, you know, we're busy looking at licenses. We'll make sure that we fully evaluate them, you know, effectively, if you can, do a pre-CPR, even ahead of bidding. But we will go it alone.
Okay. All right. So as regards Gio here, the next question is, so you must have known before the 10th, which was obviously 2 days ago, the 10th of May, that Gio had not had the required cash deposits. At which point did you know this, and why was the RNS not made then?
So in January, we were trying to find the funds for cash calls 23, 24 and 25. We'd been looking to in the process of structuring the sale of Adjay so that we can finance Mexico, and we had a difficult call a decision to make with Gio Estratos in terms of their the lack of funds they'd managed to secure. We'd won the assets, we'd been awarded them rather in December, and the difficult questions we were asking them were, what happens if you can't come up with any money? Oil fell to $26.50 in January, and they're a private company. And we could foresee that it was going to be difficult for them to come up with any cash. So we gave them a few months, and they were unable to come up with any money. So what we said was, try to find yourself another partner that will carry you, because we're unwilling to do it. The risk profile was too great. We were unwilling to dilute further. I already got into enough grief with shareholders when we diluted to hang on to Adjay, which we had no choice but to do. We told them that they'd have to find money. They didn't. So they then found a third party that was able to, that said they would come into the asset, three of the four assets. Funds were supposed to be deposited into escrow on the 14th of April or something around then. That came and went. And we had to sort of go with a plan B, if you like. They'd managed to find some funds, but at the 11th hour, literally at the 11th hour, that fell over, which is why we're unable to bond at least one of the assets. So look, I'm disappointed, of course, for them more than anything else. But it is what it is. We were unwilling to raise more money just to fund them.
Okay, all right. And regards Nigeria there, the 2.5 million are you supposed to get from GEC? The question is the 2.5 million from GEC still guaranteed?
So, yes. And just to clarify GEC's position, they are still committed to acquiring the asset. I've made it clear to them what my thoughts are, given the way things have been handled. They're asset rich. Look at their assets. They've got in excess of a billion barrels of 2P reserves. Unfortunately, they're not cash rich, as we've all found out. You know, what do you do? Do you call in a corporate guarantee for a company that would that is illiquid? You know, it's not as straightforward as that. They offered us the guarantee. We took it. What's it worth? It's hard to say. I'm not gonna pressure the company. We've got the option of keeping the asset at this stage. We're not obliged to sell it to them. They're still trying to come up with the money. And if they come up with the money and it's in a bigger and larger amount, we'll consider it.
Okay. And still,
I would like to say, Justin,
yeah.
I certainly would want to renegotiate the transaction as and when they do come up with cash, and I've told them so. Under the original structure was set up that they finance cash calls 24 and 25, which is why the first 3.5 million was 2 and 1.5 million. They failed to do so, which is why we had to dilute. The reason it was set up as a loan was so that once the thing starts to flow, if they don't want to execute the option, we'll repay them the 3.5 at a cash flow. It doesn't touch the company's PLC balance sheet. That transaction is no longer representative of where we are today. I'm waiting for the ball's in their court. They held a board meeting yesterday and we're waiting for them to come back to us, but we would want an improved offer in multiple ways as this thing's de-risked. It's flowing. Flow rates are available to them as they are to us. They're in country. So we would want to see a better offer, but not ruling anything out.
Okay. Next question. Is GPDC, is that the same as GEC?
It is. It's their corporate name versus their shortened name. So it's the same thing, yeah.
Okay, the next question is, GPDC has failed to even come up with $2 million in nearly 3 months. Why do you still consider this a viable offer when, on the current deal terms, nearly five times this amount would be required as a first payment?
Well, I kind of just answered that question.
Yeah.
I'd want to see more money. Let's see what they come up with, if anything. Just to clarify, the contract is as it stands. It's null and void. They've missed their deadline. I don't have to sell it to them. They want to buy it. They've expressed so. They would have to come up with a lot more money than it's currently structured. So let's see what happens.
Okay. All right. Next question here. Tough one for you, Stefan. Given the complete destruction in value, is your position still tenable there at MXL?
The industry as a whole has taken a massive hit. And whilst a lot of valuations have dropped following the oil price, and now the oil price has recovered a little bit, valuations haven't necessarily followed suit. There's a bit of a lag there. The funds we've raised, the vast majority of them have gone into the ground at RJ. The value is not being realised there. I believe it soon will be once we get the targeted flow rates out. Let's see if people still feel the same. But, we've had some very difficult decisions to make. It's not always as straightforward as people think. We've acted in the best interests of shareholders. I absolutely believe my position is terrible, and I've got the support of the major shareholders. So, yes.
Okay. After raising nearly 30 million over the past few years, what failing have led to a market cap of 4 million, where do you see future value to long-term shareholders?
Well, I don't know where people are getting their figures from. 30 million what exactly? If you look at our RNSs since we took over the company on the 1st of April, I think we've raised something like 12 million. I don't understand that. Future value, I've said before, comes from all of the aforementioned milestones that are expected to us.
Okay, all right. And this question here, how is it possible to spend months and months doing due diligence on four assets only to discover at the 11th hour, after winning the concessions, that they're not worth pursuing?
Well, the assets were worth pursuing. It was because our partner was unable to come up with their financial part of the bargain. They were nearly half of the asset, 45%. So if the block required $10 million for year one capex and opex, we couldn't suddenly go from budgeting for $5.5 million to $10 million because they were unable to come up with that cash. That doesn't change the quality of the assets. The economics changed on their inability to fund. The assets were great. Unfortunately, their inability to finance changed things.
Yeah, okay. And last question. We had loads of questions. A lot of them were sort of replicated or overlapped. So we've, you know, sort of summarised them. But I think we've covered most topics here. Last one was, do you believe you have deceived investors with rampy RNSs?
I see what you mean about them getting harder towards the end, Justin.
Yeah.
So, look, I take on board shareholders' feedback. It is often contradictory, mind you. I get criticised for not promoting the company enough, and then others say I'm being overly promotional, you know, as per the question, rampy RNSs. You know, we've acted as responsibly as we possibly could. We presented the fact as quickly as we could. And that's basically it. So there are factors outside of my control that I can't influence. I've never misled investors. Of course, sometimes facts change, such as GEC saying we'd like to buy it, we're coming up with the cash, and then failing to deliver, or Geo finding a buyer, us signing a binding agreement, three-way binding agreement, having the escrow account set up, and then the funds not arriving. There's no deception going on. It's the name of the game. It's not as straightforward as everyone thinks. But we're doing everything we possibly can. We're not sitting on our hands. This is what it is. But look, we're worth £4.3 million today. We're about to go from zero to something around 500 barrels a day. Our lifting costs are around the late 20s, early 30s. It moves around, you know, depending on the price of oil and the royalty that's attached, because this is not a PSC, it's a taxing way of, by the government. So, yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of value that's set to be unlocked, in our opinion, and we're very cheap at £4.3 million. But, you know, about the deception, you know, a lot of people are accusing us of making up the sale to GEC. People need to check their facts. This is a listed company. My Nomad won't let me make a press release unless I can provide verified documentation that a bona fide, proper company has signed a sale and purchase agreement, which has been checked over by both sets of lawyers that took 3 months to put together, by the way. So we can't just put out RNSs to choreograph and ramp the share price. The insinuation's absurd.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, Stefan, you know, if there are people listening right now and, you know, who you want to convince to put MXall on their watch list, because you obviously believe there's potential there, what are the three sort of summary bullet points you can give someone listening right now?
We're worth £4 million for a company producing from a profitable asset, well below its competitors, around the $30 mark. Bear in mind, this stuff, I think it's Bonnie Light Sweet. We've taken assays. We haven't got the results of them yet, but on previous tests by Chevron, this stuff would probably sell at a $2, $3 premium to Brent, so around $50 a barrel today. So we've roughly got a $20 margin. The share price is the lowest it's ever been, but we're significantly de-risked. You know, the project is up and running. The near-term news flow from Ajay regarding production, offtake, revenue, the huge upside from phase two development, which doesn't have to be and probably won't be financed out of any equity raise. And of course, what we do with Mexico going forward. So we're off to Lagos soon. And as soon as we get back, we're off to Mexico. We're busy. And we're, you know, worth £4 million today. It's nuts.
Okay, marvellous. And do you know what, Stefan? A question that always comes up, and I don't know why it wasn't put in there, I suppose, but a question that always comes up when I ask for questions is, are you doing a placing very soon? Because the rumour has been out there. So are you doing a placing?
I seem to have to deny this rumour on a weekly basis. In brief, no. I think there was something out there by Tom, bless him, a week or two ago, suggesting we were doing a placing of something like £4-5 million at a penny. I got back from Mexico yesterday afternoon, and spent half the day calling people and confirming to them that there is no placing. It got towards the end of the night, around 9, 10 o'clock, when it just became too much. There were people speculating this thing's going to get done at 0.1, 0.2, 0.3. So I woke Tom up, bless him. I think he was on his way to bed. I didn't realise he was in Greece. We had a good chat, and he's since confirmed that he's spoken with me, and I've confirmed to him there is no placing. The company's we've got cash. We don't have any commitments towards Mexico tomorrow. And we're about to kick off decent free cash from Ajay. So, you know, would we raise more money going forward if it was offered to us as a massive premium from here? Yes. Would we take any money today or around this level? Absolutely not.
Okay, well, that's cleared that up. Guys, thanks for coming on, Stefan and Nigel, and hopefully speak soon.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Way.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chairman of Way Education. That's W-E-Y ticker. It's David Massey. Thank you for coming on, David.
Well, it's a pleasure as ever to be here, Justin.
Yeah, well, do you know what? You're on about 2 months and I've got to say, I like the story a lot, and consequently, I did buy some shares in the company. I've got to say that for transparency and interest, but I really like the concept, and I just think everything's moving online, you know, and that doesn't... In fact, it, and certain things it works with, and I think it does work with education. But listen, so I know about the company. There are people out there that don't know about Way Education, so can you give us, a basic premise of what you're all about, please, David?
Yes, we are an education company, but we teach purely online. We are the UK's only online secondary school. We teach GCSEs and we teach A-levels. And we do that via the internet. We are changing a traditional industry. We're an independent school, which means that the students pay fees. We were established 11 years ago. The main operating base is down in Cricow in Wales, but that's basically an admin centre. We have over 580 students, which is up 40% on where we were a year ago, and we're growing rapidly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes sense to me. And so predominantly, tell us about your student base. Where are they based?
70% of our students are in the UK and 30% are overseas. And I checked that figure only this week by sort of postcode analysis. In the UK, primarily in England and Wales, and we tend to get little clusters because the thing about our business is that a lot of people haven't heard of the possibility to do GCSEs and A-levels online. And a lot of the recommendations historically have come by word of mouth. Way actually acquired the school business in February 2015, since when we have been beefing up the marketing effort. But we get tremendous information and referrals from our existing students and their parents. I mean, a lot of people who first hear of online schooling think, well, does that work? What about social interaction? How does the student develop? But the experience of our students and our parents has been very supportive and very positive. What they find is that, firstly, GCSEs we teach in the morning. We're very efficient because you're not commuting, because you're not having to go from classroom to classroom. We can teach very much quicker in a more concentrated form. And this means that the student has the afternoon to do other things. So if they want to play sport, they can do it. If they want to practice a musical instrument, if they're in the theatre, they can have much more time with their parents and their other siblings. And so the word of mouth is a very good recommendation. People like Mumsnet have had a lot of discussion about online schooling, and 99% of that has always been positive. Overseas, our students currently are primarily in Europe. We have a few in other places, but they tend to be the sons and daughters of expats who have either gone to live there permanently or perhaps they've been posted overseas for 2 or 3 years. And this is a way of keeping them in the UK school system. So that's our current sort of mix, though we are currently now planning a much wider international expansion over the next few years.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think there's this, almost stigma attached to online. When something comes online, first of all, I mean, it's happened before. We've seen it with online banking, with even shopping for food, and all this stuff. And it's people say, oh, I'd never bank online, or I'd never pay for something online. But that was, and then people get over that and they move on. And it's almost a bit the same with education. You realise, hang on a sec, people will revisit the thought on this and it'll become a bit more original. It will work, Not for everyone. There are certain cases it'll work with. And that, that number of cases it will work with is completely viable for a business model. And looking at your interims, I was quite surprised. I saw your interims come out because I'm a shareholder and I was quite pleased with them. And the share price didn't react that much. I thought, what's going on here? So, your student numbers have increased by 41%. You've got 583 paying students now compared to last year. And I thought, what's going on? Why didn't the share price react? That's positive. Did you think it was positive, the interim results?
I thought they were very good. I thought they reflected what we said would happen when we came to AIM last December, and they reflected what we said when we spoke in March. It's a little mystery to me why the share price hasn't moved a little bit more positively, but it seems to me that if I concentrate with the executive team on just getting the business going, making sure that we move into profit, then in due course the share price should look after itself. Mm. I am going to come back to you, Justin, on one thing you said, that it may not work for everyone, in that when I first became chairman of this company about a year ago, I thought that it was a specialised product. But over the last year or so, I see how widely applicable online education is. And one of the reasons for that is that the current generation is different from any other generation. They are very happy to receive their information in a digital form. And if you watch a group of teenagers going down the street now, they don't talk to each other. They send each other a personal message. They absolutely buy into the internet. They buy into using devices. And so I don't think we'll replace every bricks and mortar school in the world or even in the country. But I think that in 5 or 10 years' time, we'll look back and we'll see that this is the birth of internet schooling. And the great thing for Way is that we're right there. We are the first mover. We're the only online secondary school. And I suspect that we'll do very well over this summer in recruitment into our sixth form, and that you'll see growth continuing in the future.
Well, that's good to hear anyway, because obviously these figures are very good, and I, as a shareholder, I didn't want them to be a one-off, but you're seeing progress here. So, looking forward, are you changing anything? Are you improving anything at all?
Yes. We widened the subject base last September, and that had a very positive reaction. We brought in more subjects, more courses. From this September, we have introduced A-levels in physics, chemistry and biology. And historically, the school didn't teach those because it was concerned about the practicals that students should do. Firstly, we found an A-level course where if you want, you can study without doing practicals. And secondly, we put in place arrangements with some other education institutions that for our students who want to do their practicals, they can go and do them in a sort of concentrated period. So we're broadening the base and the range of subjects. We are recruiting more teachers, more senior teachers. We're in the process of bringing in 2 deputy headmasters to work under the principal. And then something that's really exciting is what we're doing for January 2017. Historically, Inter High has been a non-selective school. We welcome students of all abilities, and that will continue. But our market research, both in the UK and overseas, has identified a need for a premium brand. And this will be a very academic school. It will be selective. It will be for the sort of students who, if they don't think they're going to get 2 A's and a B at A level, it's not the right place for them. And we're in the process of setting that up with a view to a launch in January 2017. We think that's going to be an exciting expansion. And at the same time, we are now starting to do more what we call B2B business, which is where our customer, instead of being an individual student and his parent, is a local authority or another school who want to buy some element of specialized tuition offers. I really think that we will see that the internet becomes, if not the complete educational tool for a student, it becomes part of their education. And that's very much where the United States is going. And of course, in Australia, they've used distance learning of this form for many years because of all the kids that were on the sheep stations.
Yeah. Okay, marvellous. Well, David, if anyone needs any more convincing, could you give us three bullet points as to why someone should put Way Education, that's ticker W-E-Y, on their Vox Markets watch list?
Well, I think the first thing is it's the business reason. You know, we are using the internet to change a traditional industry. And I think your listeners will have seen what has happened to other industries, whether it be retail or music, when the technology has been applied to it. And I think we're right in at the beginning of that. The second reason is the one you alluded to, that our growth is going at 40% per year. And if you look at the analyst report written by WH Ireland, they expect that to continue into the foreseeable future. And the third thing is that all the numbers and all the things we've talked about don't have anything in there for the international expansion. And we're very excited in particular about Asia, and you can see a situation whereby in a short period of time, that business, which is still to go, still to be launched, could be much bigger than our UK business.
Marvellous, David, lovely to speak to you. And, you know, please do come on again when you have some more news.
I'd love to, Justin. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is the Mad Stork and private investor, successful private investor. And glad to be with us because you nearly had what you thought was an explosion this morning in your flat and you called the fire brigade. Is that right?
Yes, afternoon, Justin. Yes, that's right. I was sitting, because my flat is on the ground floor of a conversion, so yeah. I was sitting in my flat, taking chairs as I do, and I suddenly heard a massive crash, like a really loud crash from upstairs. Mm-hmm. Went outside into the hallway, and there was like dust and what I thought was smoke, and the smoke alarm's going off.
Right.
So I thought, oh shit. Pardon my French there. I thought, oh dear, there's been a explosion or something. So I rang the fire brigade, and I went upstairs, and it just turned out that a whole load of plaster had fallen off the ceiling upstairs.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Wow. And it set the fire alarm off. That's mad.
Well, the bit that fell off had the smoke alarm in it, so that's going off.
Yeah. That's quite scary at the start. Listen, I forgive you for the expletive because, you know, I don't imagine you went out there and went, oh, dear. You know, I imagine it was a bit more, you know, false than that. A bit of a go. So, hey, it's fine. Well, listen, you're safe, you're well, you're here, minus a bit of plaster and a fire alarm, which you should put back up because obviously we know that saves lives. But, okay, let's talk about stocks and shares. Now, I understand just before we got recording here, you've become a bit more bearish or cautious, haven't you?
I think from the last time as I've been on, I've been saying that I have been sort of bearish of the market at least the last year since July, but recently, you know, as I flagged on Twitter and stuff, I have been pulling money out of the market. I'm about 75% cash at the moment. Now. Yeah, the shares that I've reduced in, it's not a reflection on any of the any specific share at all. It's just that I feel the market's going to be heading for a bit of severe turbulence in the near future.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Listen, I tweeted out today. I've got to keep reminding myself because I'm sitting on the same amount of cash, but percentage wise, it's above 60% anyway. And I've got to keep reminding myself. Listen. Don't buy in, hold back now. There'll be, you know, plenty of opportunities during the Brexit time when there's volatility. And I believe that summer months plus that on top. I keep saying this. I say, you know, do you remember Greece had the problems? It was slightly different, I know, but Greece had the problems a while back, you know, and they are the 147th biggest economy in the world, and it wobbled the markets. There's uncertainty because it's not a question of the size of Greece. It's a question of whether the EU as a project is viable. And if you've got the fifth biggest economy, you know, the UK, threatening to leave, that does throw a massive question to the viability of the economic union, you know? And I just think that uncertainty, and people say, oh, the polls will show we're going to stay in. Yeah, but the polls are not always accurate. Look at the general election last year when Labour was, you know, so that, the uncertainty, isn't it?
There is a danger. I mean, the market at the moment certainly appears to be pricing in Remain. But I think that's very, very dangerous. I mean, you know, personally, I won't go into my personal politics, but I suspect that it's very, very dangerous to assume that it's going to be a Remain vote, because, you know, anything could tip the balance. And you know, my feeling as well is that people who want to leave tend to be much more motivated than... you know, the people who want to stay in. So you get a lot. So even if in absolute numbers there's more people wanting to stay in or saying they want to stay in, the actual people who are actually going to vote, I think you're going to lean towards leaving.
Yeah, do you know what it's like? It's like, you know, when you get any kind of poll on royalty, the staunch royalists will always vote and count the numbers to vote that, say, we want royals. But the people who don't care or don't mind the indifferent don't really vote, you know? So there may be a lot more people that don't really care about the royals, you know, but they don't vote. So it's the indifference that, you know, it's the staunch. You're right. I think the staunch people that really hate Europe will go out and vote. The people that don't care or are a bit apathetic about politics won't vote. So maybe closer than we think, you are right. And I think, you know, I think reducing positions in the market, you can't lose doing that. Because the worst thing happens, you know, I still hold stocks and I'm still interested in the market. So if it goes up, I'm happy. I'm happy if my stocks go up. I've got cash to invest more. Now, if it tanks and I'm fully invested, I can lose, you know? So, that's what I think, anyway.
I'm sure, you know, if it does tank, as you say, it may not. And, you know, if that happens, then fine, not anything. But if it does, then there's probably going to be some bargains about. So if you have got a lot of cash sitting there, you know, and you are following a few shares that you think are good, but then they tank because the market's tanking, great opportunity to buy in.
Well, and also I see it as an opportunity. I'm not a doomsayer. People say, oh, you're doomsaying, you're in cash, you're talking down the market. No, all I'm saying is I think there'll be opportunity to buy a cheap shares. That's all I'm saying. I'm not, you know, standing out for, I'm not saying there'll be a bear market for the next 2 years.
Yes.
I'm just thinking there's an opportunity.
I'm not doom and gloom by any stretch. I'm not one of these people who thinks there's going to be a massive systemic collapse and everything is going to go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think that the chances are, as I say, it may not happen, may be wrong, but everything sort of seems to be lining up with the Brexit and the sort of extended rally that we've seen, and the traditional summer lull. It just seems the chances are that there will be a big correction. And you know, it just seems, especially for me personally, because I had a very good April, you know, did very well in April. And I thought before, you know, back in sort of March, February time, I was going to take my money out, or at least quite a lot out in May anyway. And especially after I've had this good month in April, I don't want to be giving all of those profits back.
I'm with you. It's having a plan, isn't it? I had that. I said back in, you know, even back last year in April, I thought, you know, we hit highs then and the market performed badly afterwards. I said, right, next April, I'm not going to make the same mistake. I'm going to lighten up a little bit and, you know, have some cash to buy in at opportunities. So, but this is interesting now. So you still hold stocks, which makes these stocks almost even more relevant, because you obviously see a bit of upside to them and you'll hold them even though you know there's turbulent markets ahead. So you plan.
Yes.
So what do you hold at the moment? What stocks are you bullish on at the moment?
The big one that I've only recently bought, and I don't think it's been mentioned on here before, although it has, you know, people are on Twitter, I'm sure they've seen it mentioned, is Sylvania Platinum, SLP.
Yeah, I've had several requests to get them on the podcast, SLP, yeah. So what are they all about? I mean, I've done a little bit of research, right? But not a lot. But so what's happening with SLP?
So they... If you look back at the latest quarterly update from them was end of April, a couple of weeks ago, and they were making $3.2 million EBITDA for that quarter. Now the basket, and they're a platinum, obviously platinum and platinum group metal producer, and the basket of their products that they were selling in the first quarter of the year, so January to March, average price was $860 for the basket. Now that average price will have gone up for this quarter up to $1,050-ish. So that's going to translate to a roughly 60% increase in their overall profits.
Yeah.
So I think for this quarter, so for April to June, you're going to see at least $6 million EBITDA. So yeah, and assuming spot prices hold where they are for the for the foreseeable future, which seems to me reasonable given that precious metals tend to go up in times of uncertainty. And as I say, I think there is going to be continued uncertainty. So assuming those spot prices do hold where they are at the moment, that's an annual EBITDA of $24 million at least.
And
at the moment is 19-20 million pounds.
Yeah.
And they have £5 million cash. So the enterprise value for a concern that's going to be producing $24 million, about 18 million pound EBITDA, the enterprise value for that at the moment is £15 million, which is insane.
Yeah.
Now the reason that it's not corrected in line with platinum prices. So if you look at the chart, you can see back in February time, it started to move in line with platinum prices, but then immediately dropped back.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at the chart there, you can see it going up and then immediately coming back down again. And the reason for that is that an institutional seller is currently selling Milton. They're a forced seller because their star fund managers who are managing this fund are leaving. So loads of people are selling out the fund, and so Milton need to liquidate some of their positions in order to cover these redemptions.
Yeah.
It's a forced seller. They've got quite a few shares, which is why the price hasn't corrected in line with the profits that they're going to be making. So, it's a fantastic opportunity, absolutely incredible opportunity. And in this sort of time where I'm scaling back not completely, but a lot from the market, that stuck out to me as being an extremely good bet.
Yeah, well, fundamentally they are, aren't they? Like you say, Mitan, they are scaling down. I can see now their last sell was they've gone below 10%. So, you could assume, so they hold, what, 29 million left, I think. So,
obviously it's impossible to say exactly what they'll do, but I personally don't think they'll be selling all of that because they just need to liquidate enough to satisfy these redemptions. And they must be able to see, obviously, that, platinum prices have shot up and the price is on the floor. So, they must be able to see that there's significant upside there. So, I don't really think they'll be selling all of them, just enough to cover what they're forced to.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting play anyway. And I mean, like I said, if you intend to invest, I'd scale in anyway, because like you said, there's a volatility ahead. And so, dip your foot in now and dip your toe in and, scale in. Cool. All right, so quickly, go on.
Yeah, because platinum and gold, I think will respond well to volatility in the market. I think that's a kind of hedge against volatility, if you will.
Yeah, cool. All right. Marvel, so a quick name check of some of the stocks you hold. Do you still hold, last time you had your Barclay Energy or Energia?
Yes, still hold Barclay Energia. That's, I think that's going to be a great long-term bet. That's one of the ones I've scaled back because I have scaled back pretty much all of my holdings other than SLP. KEFI is one that I hold. It is one I still hold the full whack of because I think it's gold and they've got this catalyst coming up. Still hold Infrastrata, again, scale that back. But again, I think that'll do very well. Still hold Falcon, again, scaled it back, but it'll do well. I took my first ever placing in Canadian Overseas Petroleum, which is one that I think will get a lot of interest later on in the summer, so I won't talk about that
Okay, cool. Marvellous. Listen, fella, it's good to have you on, and we'll speak again very soon.
Yes, thank you, Justin.
Okay, today's suggested penny stock with potential is suggested by Paul, and he's gone for Sykic. That's S-Y-Q. What does the company do? It's a fast-growing provider of live TV and on-demand video content across mobile and internet-enabled consumer devices. Incorporated in Jersey and headquartered in the UK, it is a rapidly expanding service footprint in Asia, as well as throughout Europe, South America, Central America, and India. How many shares does the company have at issue? It's 27 million. 26.9 million. Current price and market cap is 20 pence, which values the company at 5.38 million. Let's have a look at these on the chart. Let's just check there. So it's SYQ. They are 19.5 pence, not far off that. What's the revenue and profit loss the company generate? Around 11 million in revenue currently. How much cash does the debt have? £150,000 cash, no debt. There's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, currently in takeover negotiations with 18th of May deadline. When is that? Oh, so it's not, it's next week, isn't it, I think? Number two, IPO on 2013 at 62 pence. And 52 high at 50 pence. Number three, projected profit 2016 set to be 1.6 million, which on a PE of 10 gives a market cap of 16 million, three times current market cap. So please do your own research on this company. That's SYQ or Sykic, S-Y-Q ticker. And like I say, go to the page here at foxmarkets.co.uk/blog to add that to your watch list. All right. Thanks so much for listening. That's it for the podcast. And don't forget, please do get involved here. If you think you know of a penny stock with potential, please suggest it. Just click the link at Vox Markets. And don't forget, if you can, if you can get any value from this podcast, please go to iTunes, give me a rating and review. If you could, 5-star rating and review, and I'll read it out to the podcast and dedicate the podcast to you. Thanks for listening again. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.